so much of what I do on this show, it's not even just talking about the subject matter in itself, the Middle East conflict, Trump's response, and the rest of it, but it's talking about the information ecosystem. And of course, these two things, they're distinct, but they're inextricably connected. They cannot be separated from one another. Because of course, how we got this far, because you could ask yourself, how did we wind up in this situation? How is it even possible? How is it possible that we were promised no new wars by Trump, who his entire political career was sort of based on rejecting Iraq and the legacy of nation building and neoconservatives and foreign influence? It's a really important question. Something that I reminds me of a conversation I had with somebody a year ago, a very big Trump supporter. And I distinctly remember we were playing video games. I've brought this up before. And I said, I'm not voting for Trump because he's going to take us to war in Iran. And my buddy said, I just don't see how that's going to happen. I just don't see it. I can't see how that's going to happen. You know, and that's the problem. So you say to yourself, how is it possible? It's a very important question, how we arrived in this place, which is surprising to so many people and unthinkable, or was previously unthinkable to so many people. Well, that it is unthinkable has everything to do with how we got here. It is the programmed indifference. It is the programmed apathy, the brainwashed ignorance. That's how we got here. And this has everything to do with the information or misinformation, disinformation that's being spread this week. So before we get into the latest on the battlefield in Iran and Israel, I do want to talk about how conservative influencers are treating all of this, because really, if you're not paying attention to this, you need to be. And by paying attention, I mean you need to notice what they're saying, how they're treating the subject, and why. These conservative influencers, and I'll name some names, guys like Charlie Kirk, Steven Crowder, Jack Posobiec, DC Drano, I forget his real name, Michael Knowles, Matt Walsh. These guys are all Gentiles. They're not Jewish. I don't know if his name's Rogan O'Hanley. I guess he's Irish. So I don't think any of them are Jewish. They're all Trump supporters. They're all pretty far right. I think you could distinguish them from some other conservative commentators and say that that little group that I just named, like the Charlie Kirks, the Crowders, they have a harder edge, you could say, than some of the more mainstream guys. They are mainstream, but they're sort of a different category, let's say. They're from a very pro-Trump wing. They weren't the Never Trumpers. They weren't the capital C conservatives from the old days. You could say these guys have a little bit of a harder edge. And all of these conservative influencers, they have something to say about everything. About the new Snow White movie, the new Disney movie, about Pride Month, about the advertisements, about any, no matter how mundane, whatever culture war issue, they got something to say about everything. But if you've been paying attention, when this crisis in the Middle East started last week, suddenly none of them had anything to say. Did you notice that? Last Thursday, when Israel initiated the war, and never forget, Israel started the war. Israel fired the first shot. Israel, in defiance of President Trump, deliberately to sabotage the president's diplomacy with Iran, they fired the first shot in what they called a preemptive strike. Preempting what exactly? Nobody knows. They have no evidence. They can't tell you. They say it was preemptive. I'm not sure what that was supposed to preempt. I'm not sure they know. Nobody knows. In any case, when Israel fired the first shot in a deliberate attempt, in a defiant move to sabotage Trump's diplomacy, to drag the United States into a regime change war, these guys didn't say anything. And if you were paying attention on Thursday, they were posting polls, a poll, an opinion poll on Twitter. Charlie Kirk and Jack Posobiec and Usual Suspects. Normally, you'd get a hot take fresh off the presses. You get a hot take. Oh, the Democrats, the left, the wokesters, this, that, and the other, right? Normally, when it's a mass shooting, when it's a major press release, when it's a police-involved shooting, when it any kind of flashpoint for conflict, any kind of cultural flashpoint, you would get hot off the presses, some hot take about the Democrats, the left, and something of that nature. All of a sudden, radio silence. We got an opinion poll. Charlie Kirk says, well, what do you think? He puts out a poll on Twitter. Do you support what's happening? Would you support a war in Iran? No hot takes. They got nothing. It actually took them days to come up with something. If you noticed, Thursday, Friday, they said nothing. Other than vague ruminations. Well, I trust the president. Well, I think I'd be against regime change. But you could literally see in real time, in the first 48 hours, the wheels were turning. And there was a crisis meeting happening at Turning Point headquarters, at Daily Wire, wherever. How are we going to explain this one? We have gassed up Trump. We have portrayed him as this messianic figure. We have gone out to bat for him. We have, in an ad hoc way, appropriated his non-interventionist rhetoric, even though it's never really been consistent with his real policies. They said, so how do we sell this one to the base? How do we satisfy Trump, who wants us to support intervention? How do we satisfy our Zionist donors who want us to support their war? But also, how do we placate our audience, which is stridently opposed to regime change and opposed to Middle Eastern wars? So you could see for a couple of days, they were very quiet. They were posting polls. They were kind of just throwing some things out there to see what would stick and figuring out what the line was going to be. And the positions have changed over the past week. And I said this earlier. Before the conflict started, they were saying they were all behind Trump and Steve Witkoff's diplomatic efforts. They said no new wars. No new wars. We want a diplomatic solution. Trump is the peace president. He's going to make great deals. We're going to have prosperity in the Middle East. You know, what he ran on, the campaign. Then Israel starts the war. And not only does Israel initiate the hostility, but Trump, the following morning, gets in front of the press and says, we knew about it the whole time. It was all part of the plan. We set Iran up. We told them we were interested in a deal. We lied. This is what the Israelis said, and Trump sort of confirmed this. We set them up. It was a ruse to get them to lower their guard so that Israel could attack them. And we knew everything. Trump's words, I knew everything. So the following day, all these people that were saying they supported the diplomacy, well, now they look like idiots. Because at the same time that Trump was apparently lying to the Iranians, he was also lying to his own base. And all these, even the more academic types like Kurt Mills and Tucker Carlson, a CIA asset, even they were interviewing Steve Witkoff and supporting the diplomatic overture. So Trump pulled the rug, not just on Iran, but also on everybody that was supporting him and the peace talks. So then they changed their position one time. They changed their position and said, well, we shouldn't get involved. That was the line they took, to the extent that they took a line at all. They went from no new wars. And then the following day, when Israel attacked Iran and Trump said, we knew about it, they said, well, Israel can attack Iran, but we shouldn't join them. We should let Israel do the attack by themselves. Now, this is a talking point. This is a carefully crafted marketing ploy. It's disingenuous. It's borderline a lie. And we've talked about that throughout the conflict in Gaza and the broader conflict in the Middle East. Why is it disingenuous? Why is it a lie to say that we should not get involved? Because we're already involved. and we've already been involved. And we've talked about this many times. I'm not going to belabor the point. But who do you think supplies Israel with all of their military hardware? The drones they used against Iran. The satellite intelligence that Israel used to carry out the strikes. The interceptors and missile defense that Israel uses to shoot down Iranian drones and missiles. The Hellfire missiles that Israel drops on Iran from its fighter jets. We provide all of it. And this president in particular furnished Israel with $12 billion in military aid. That was, I believe, in January or February. Not only that, but the United States is actively involved in shooting down Iran's missiles that are launched at Israel. The United States' threat of force against Iran and all the other countries in the region deters them from attacking Israel, and that enables Israel to attack them without any cost, and it emboldens them. So strategically, tactically, militarily, offensively, and defensively, we are already involved in every way, shape, and form. So when they changed their tune a little bit, they went from saying no new wars, then they said, well, it's Israel's war. Let them fight Iran. Let them fight it out. We should stay out of it. That was a line that they fed you. It was a lie. It was a marketing ploy to make you indifferent. Do you understand? They were trying to cultivate in the perception of the public the idea that we're not involved. And if we're not involved, then Americans can safely look the other way. They can confidently stop paying attention. Oh, well, that's an Israel problem. Let's just talk about something else. And so many American conservatives say, ah, yeah, you're right. Ah, yeah, I like that idea. I like the idea that Israel will fight our wars for us and we'll hang out here and talk about domestic politics. Disingenuous. And this is a way of cultivating a form of implicit consent, which is to say that as long as the United States is supporting Israel, that is the constant position, that is the status quo. Unless there is open dissent against it, it won't change. So if they can convince people that it's not our problem and we should be indifferent to it because we're not involved and it's Israel's war, then nobody's going to speak out against it. Then nobody is going to be there vocally opposed and dissenting. And if that's the case, then the status quo, without interruption, without intervention, will continue. So this is a form of creating a form of implicit consent. And I've talked about this idea a lot. Somewhere along the way, in the past 5 or 6 years, the Israel lobby realized that Americans were not going to support a super pro-Israel interventionist foreign policy. They're hip. They're smart. They realized the tide had turned, and the idea that Americans are going to be these super evangelical Zionists waving the Israeli flag, saying, you know, we're going to die for Israel and we're going to fight Arabs and terrorists. And the Israelis realized we got hip to that. And so that wasn't going to sell. So instead, what they did is the U.S. government continues the same policy. AIPAC is still behind them. The Israel lobby is still behind them. It has chugged along throughout Trump's first term, Biden's term, and now Trump's second term. The revolution in their strategy was to convince Americans to be indifferent and say things like, let Israel fight their own battles. Let's give Israel the weapons to fight Iran. Let's give Israel the tools to conduct their own foreign policy. And that's a gift to us because then we can disengage. So that was the first pivot, and it contained a lie. So they went from no new wars to, well, we shouldn't get involved. Then America got involved. Friday morning, Iran began their retaliation against Israel. Iran began sending ballistic missiles and kamikaze drones, and I think some cruise missiles over at Israel in these barrages, these waves of hundreds of missiles at a time. And everyone's air force was activated to defend Israel. The Israeli Air Force, the Jordanian Air Force, the British Air Force, the French Air Force, and yes, the United States Air Force was deployed from Qatar to defend Israeli airspace. And I think they were deployed also over Jordan and Syria as well to shoot down the drones and missiles. So we got involved. And the narrative changed again. And I saw Charlie Kirk on Twitter saying, well, I'm against offensive intervention. I don't think we should go on the offense against Iran. We shouldn't participate in the offensive strikes against Iran. It became undeniable that we are involved. We're involved defensively. So they had to create this subtle distinction and say, oh, well, you know, we're already involved defensively. We're arming Israel. We just shouldn't carry out our own airstrikes. And the reason is obvious. Because if the United States is directly striking Iran, then Iran would be forced to directly strike us and attack our bases, attack Baghdad, attack the Emirates, maybe Qatar, Saudi Arabia, something like that, Syria, Jordan. And then Americans would die and we would get sucked in and then it would turn into a big problem. So they changed it again and said, well, we shouldn't have offensive strikes. But once again, there's another lie in there. Because, and I'm not going to belabor this one too much, but there is no distinction between offensive and defensive support in a conflict. If somebody comes and shoots your entire family and someone else didn't pull the trigger, but they gave that person the gun and the bullets to do it, and if you tried to hunt that person down, that person would kill you, the other guy would kill you, it's a distinction without a difference. If the United States is giving Israel the weapons that bomb Iran, giving them the intelligence and coordinates to precisely target Iranian targets, if when Iran retaliates, we create a shield around Israel so that Israel will not get hit back, does it really matter whether we're bombing Iran directly or whether we're just helping Israel bomb Iran directly and making it low or no cost for Israel to bomb Iran directly? Of course not. In the same way that it matters very little how we're being involved in Ukraine. And that hasn't stopped the same people from criticizing our defensive intervention in Ukraine or in Taiwan, for that matter, or in a number of other conflicts. So once again, another lie. Well, you know, we shouldn't go on the offense. Now there is a new rhetorical innovation. Get this one. So we're going to get into this a little bit later tonight, but it is becoming clear that the United States is preparing to intervene in the conflict. Specifically, the United States is going to use its B-2 stealth bombers to drop massive ordnance penetrator bunker-busting bombs on Iran's nuclear facility at Fordo, because Israel does not have these capabilities. They do not have a strategic air force. They do not have a massive ordnance penetrator. They don't have big enough bunker busters. They can't do it. We have to therefore finish what they started. And this is now being sold to us. Think about how this has evolved in 5 days. Now this is being sold to Americans as limited in scope, meaning we're not going to put boots on the ground. We're not going to occupy Iran for 20 years like we did in Iraq. We're not going to have to fight a counterinsurgency like we did in Afghanistan. We're not going to nation build and create a fledgling democratic government. It's being sold as limited in scope. You know, we're just going to drop a couple of bombs. What's the big deal? It's being sold as low cost. Israel already destroyed Iran's air defenses. Israel controls their airspace. Therefore, we're not going to get hit back. Our bombers are going to be safe. They're not going to be shot out of the sky. And American bases are not going to be blown up and Americans killed. And therefore, they're saying, well, this isn't real neoconservatism. This isn't really interventionism. Trump never said he was never going to use the military. This isn't a big war. It's low risk. Therefore, this is an acceptable type of action. It's fine. You know, they're saying something like this. And the new rhetorical innovation, and I saw this all day on Twitter. I saw a compilation from Michael Knowles. I saw it from Steven Crowder. I saw it from Charlie Kirk. They're all saying, hey, maybe you're opposed to regime change in Iran. You can agree or disagree. They say, but what you can't say is that Trump is a hypocrite. Because Trump said in 2016 that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon. And he said in 2020 and 2024 that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon. They're saying, so if Trump bombs Iran's nuclear program, this is not a 180. It's not an about face. It's not a betrayal. It's not hypocrisy. They're saying because Trump campaigned on it, so he's being consistent. That's what they're going with. That's really what they're going with. And in the first place, I would say it is incredible to me. We are on the precipice of World War III, literally a nuclear war. Nuclear war is what is at stake. Why? Because Israel is a nuclear power. Iran has a latent nuclear program. Israel is being pushed maybe to the brink, depending on how things play out in the couple of weeks. The DEFCON level has been raised. It is not outside the realm of possibility that a nuclear weapon is deployed, either against Iran or some form of a dirty bomb or something, a weapon of mass destruction, against another country before this is over. Moreover, because of the alignment of other states like Russia and China, it's looking unlikely, but it's still a possibility that great powers can be drawn in, and this could turn into an intercontinental global conflict. In the midst of this, what Republican influencers seem to be concerned about is whether we think Trump is a hypocrite. Trump is drawing us into this war. Trump is allowing Israel to draw him and the rest of us into the war. And what do Charlie Kirk and Knowles and Matt Walsh and others have to say? Well, don't call him a hypocrite, you know, because he said we were going to war with Iran. So you need to be okay with that. Really? Trump said in 16, 20, and 24, Iran can't have nukes. So now that the United States is bombing Iran for some reason, because Israel wanted us to, now nobody should be complaining about Trump. Oh, well, hey, you know, you can't say you weren't warned. Trump did say no nukes, so you got to be in favor of this. Don't call Trump out. They're also saying things like, well, this is going to split the base. People are talking about, you know, whether this is MAGA. You got neocons, genuine Jewish neocons, saying, if you don't support Trump bombing Iran, you're not MAGA. I'm seeing huge engagement on these anonymous, probably AI, shill, who even knows if they're American, Twitter accounts, and they're saying, look at all the rats abandoning MAGA just because he's bombing Iran. What? What? I see these like anonymous pro-Trump shill accounts with 20,000 likes. They're saying all this did was reveal who were the fake MAGA supporters. If you're not with Trump bombing Iran, you're fake MAGA. And then you have other people that are saying, well, I don't support bombing Iran, but hey, he always said we were going to do it. So we must quietly support him and just put our faith in him and pray to him. As if that will change anything. It's a weird, like, Protestant form of worship where you see people like Charlie Kirk saying, just trust in Trump. Just trust in him. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to turn my phone off. I'm going to literally, he said this, turn your phone off. Not everything, not everything happening in the Middle East affects your life. Just focus on family and put your trust in Trump. Like, and this is as if to say, like, trust that he won't bomb, or if he does, it's all going to be okay. What? And then there's people like me that got off the train a year ago and said, I don't know what the fuck is going on here. I signed up in 2016 because Trump said to Jeb Bush, the war in Iraq was a mistake. And I quote, there were weapons of mass destruction. There weren't none. We knew there were none. They said there were weapons of mass destruction. He lied. Those are the words of Donald Trump in 2016. It's the same story now. They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There weren't none. They knew there were none. He lied. That's the same situation happening now. I supported Trump because he was criticizing Bush, George Bush, and Jeb Bush, and Rubio, and others then on that basis. Because I thought that Trump was going to withdraw our troops from the Middle East, not give them permanent bases in Syria and Iraq, not get us into another regime change war in the Persian Gulf to take out weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. And the line they're going with is something like, well, Trump always said he was going for the nukes, and they're saying, and that's a good thing. They're saying, we don't support regime change, but we do support going after Iran's nuclear weapons. And this is sort of like yet another, it's like a similar package deal with, well, Trump always said we were going after Iran's nukes. Now the Charlie Kirk crowd and others are saying, well, we should take out Iran's nukes because, you know, we don't want Iran to be a nuclear power. They say death to America. It is America first to disarm Iran. Trump said the same thing. And that talking point is coming from him. He said America first means denuclearizing Iran. Now, let's talk about that. Once again, just like saying we shouldn't get involved, just like saying we shouldn't go on offense, just like saying, you know, Trump always said we were going to take out their nukes. This is yet another lie. We'll put it simply. Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. Iran is not pursuing a nuclear weapon. Not only that, the supreme leader of Iran, you know, everybody always likes to talk about the mullahs. You hear that all the time. These people are idiots. Iran has a supreme leader, the Ayatollah. He is the chief cleric. He is the sovereign. He is the head of state of Iran. The supreme leader of Iran, the head mullah, the head cleric, promulgated a fatwa 20 years ago saying, not only is Iran not pursuing a nuclear weapon, it is against Islamic law. He said it is against Islamic jurisprudence for a Muslim nation to acquire or pursue a nuclear bomb. So when you hear these people say, they say death to America, I don't know, I mean, the mullahs hate America. Let's quote the supreme leader. Why is this never talked about? Why have you never heard of this? Why is this not a headline? Why do conservatives never say this? It is the official Islamic doctrine of the supreme leader, the head of Shiite Islam in Iran, that it is against Islamic law to acquire a bomb. Now, people can say they don't believe that. People can say that Iran has covertly acquired a bomb with a clandestine weapons program and they don't trust them. That's fine. But in as much as people want to talk about what Iranians are saying and taking them at their word, why is that never mentioned? It's sort of like Osama bin Laden. When they blamed bin Laden for attacking the Twin Towers on 9/11 and they talk about how Al-Qaeda and the Muslims hate us for our freedoms. They never mentioned that in bin Laden's fatwa against the United States, bin Laden said that he was coming for America because of our support for Israel, because of U.S. bases in the Hejaz in Saudi Arabia, because of the Israeli war in Lebanon in 1982, that was the inspiration for various attacks. They never mentioned this. Why and why not? Moreover, for all this talk about nuclear proliferation, it is U.S. doctrine to oppose the proliferation of all WMDs, all weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. There is one country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons. One. That country is Israel. Israel is not a signatory on the non-proliferation treaty. Israel maintains a secretive, covert, undeclared arsenal of at least 200 nuclear bombs deliverable by missile, plane, and submarine. Israel acquired a nuclear bomb by stealing nuclear technology from other countries, including the United States, and nuclear material from other countries, including the United States. They evaded international and U.S. inspections throughout the 60s in order to acquire this. I saw earlier today, Charlie Kirk and others have said, I don't know why. J.D. Vance said it too. The vice president said, I don't know why Iran would enrich uranium to 60%. I don't know why, unlike any other peaceful nuclear state that has nuclear energy, why would they enrich uranium to 60%? I'll tell you why. Because Israel triggered an arms race in the Middle East. Israel, in the 1950s, it became an obsession of their leadership to acquire the bomb by any means necessary. David Ben-Gurion, it was said, it was literally his obsession to the point of nervous breakdowns that Israel acquire the bomb. Probably they killed Jack Kennedy in order to pursue the bomb. And then throughout the 80s, throughout the 90s, throughout the 2000s, Israel sabotaged the nuclear weapons programs of every other one of their neighbors to suppress their deterrent capability. In 1981, Iraq was developing a nuclear reactor in collaboration with France. Probably they wanted a nuclear weapon to counter Israel and balance Israel's nuclear weapon. Israel bombed their nuclear program in 81. In 1990, the United States invaded Iraq. In 2003, we invaded and overthrew their government. In 2007, Israel bombed Syria's nuclear program. 4 years later, a civil war started, and the United States, Turkey, Israel, and Saudi Arabia supported various Islamist extremist groups, up to and including ISIS, to overthrow Assad's government. He's now gone. In 2003, Libya voluntarily gave up its nuclear program with U.S. and international inspections. In 2011, Libya was overthrown with NATO airstrikes led by the United States. Why does Iran have a nuclear program? Why have they been put on the pathway to a latent nuclear weapons program or a threshold status between a peaceful program and something like a weapons program? To answer J.D. Vance's question, because if you start in the middle of the story, it doesn't make sense. If you start at the beginning, you see that Israel triggered an arms race, secured the ultimate weapon, the ultimate capability, and has used that as leverage to prosecute regime change wars against all of its neighbors. It's only in response, as a reaction, that every other country has tried to defend themselves and ultimately failed and were then destroyed by Israel. This is the same story with Iran. Now, I only lay that out to say, when people talk about Iran, you know, I saw Glenn Beck say this the other day. Glenn Beck said that the mullahs want a nuclear bomb to wash the world in blood and pave the way for the Mahdi or the 12th Imam or something like that. That's this theological, eschatological vision that they have for the world. They're trying to hasten the end of time by getting a nuke and killing everybody. Is that what's happening? Or is it in reality that Israel acquired the bomb and forced everybody else into an arms race to protect themselves from regime change by Israel? Now they say that, well, Israel had to strike Iran, and now the United States does too because of their nuclear program. Well, I'd like to read to you a report. This is from U.S. intelligence. It says that as of Thursday, when Israel initiated the attack on Iran, Iran did not have nukes, was not pursuing nukes, and was at best 3 years away from acquiring one. So think about that. When they tell you, well, you know, look, Trump always said we were going to denuclearize Iran. When they tell you, we're going to bomb their nukes and nothing else. When they tell you Iran wants to get a nuke to wash the world in blood because they're crazy Muslims and they just want to kill everybody for no reason. Iran does not have nukes, is not pursuing nukes currently, and is at best 3 years away from a decision to make one, to actually acquiring one. This is from U.S. intelligence. It says, quote, when Israel launched its series of strikes against Iran last week, it issued a number of dire warnings about the country's nuclear program, suggesting Iran was fast approaching a point of no return in its quest to obtain nuclear weapons and that the strikes were necessary to preempt that outcome. But U.S. intelligence assessments had reached a different conclusion. Not only was Iran not pursuing a nuclear weapon, it was up to 3 years away from being able to produce and deliver one to a target of its choosing. Now, after days of Israeli strikes, U.S. intelligence officials believe that so far, Israel may have set back Iran's nuclear program by only a matter of months. Even as Israel has done significant damage to Iran's facility at Natanz, which houses the most centrifuges necessary to enrich uranium, a second heavily fortified site at Fordo remains effectively untouched. So for everybody that is now retconning this yet again, understand where this has gone. We went from no new wars, the president of peace, to stay out of it, to stay out of it offensively, to, well, Trump never said he wasn't going to bomb Iran's nukes, to bomb the nukes, but just not regime change. They don't have them. They don't have them. They're not pursuing them. And the only reason we're even at this point, and let's be honest, Iran is a threshold state. That's not a legal, technical status, but it is what they are. The only reason they've come this far, in spite of declaring it contrary to their law, in spite of being open to inspections and negotiations and the rest of it, is because Israel has the bomb, and Israel, in concert with the United States, has carried out regime change in like eight countries in the past 30 years. So yet another lie. Well, we're bombing their nukes. They don't have them. It's the same story as Iraq. And the last thing. You don't bomb Iran's nuclear program and then not have regime change. That is necessarily going to come next. You can go back as far as the 1990s and the early 2000s, and Benjamin Netanyahu was saying regime change is the goal. Here's a quote. This is Netanyahu in 2006. He said, and I quote, try to hear the subtlety here. He said, the goal is not just to prevent Iran from going nuclear, but to get rid of the regime altogether. 2006, that was 20 years ago. And you could go back in the 90s, similar statements by previous prime ministers that Iran is their number one threat. Eventually, the Iranian regime has to go. They're not being subtle about it. This is part of a pattern, maybe in a vacuum. Maybe if you woke up on Thursday and had amnesia, you had short-term memory loss or something, you could say, well, we're just going in to bomb Iran's nukes. The nukes that they don't have, the nukes that they're not pursuing, the threshold status that they only have maintained because Israel's destroyed every other country from the safety of their underground nuclear bunker. And now we're being sold a limited strike without casualties, without regime change. They're denuclearizing Iran for regime change. That's the whole point. They're denuclearizing Iran for regime change. They started by killing Iran's top generals. Then they destroyed their air bases. Then they destroyed their missile silos to degrade their ability to retaliate. Then they started bombing their oil refineries, their energy, which is the heart of their economy. Now we want to destroy their nuclear facilities. What do you think comes next? It's going to be toppling the government. They have been in the process of grooming the Shah's successor, the next in line in the Pahlavi dynasty, who I imagine they assume is going to take over and restore the Iranian monarchy after the Islamic Republic is toppled. Of course that's the next step. Of course that's what they're advocating. It's what they've always been advocating. Why would it be a problem if Iran had nukes, or that there was even a good deal with the United States if their goal was anything other than regime change? So this is yet another deception, yet another disingenuous talking point, marketing, being foisted on us to cultivate indifference so that people say every step of the way, oh, well, let's just not pay attention to the gathering storm in the Middle East at all. Oh, well, conflict has broken out, but let's let them duke it out. It's not our problem. Oh, we're involved. Well, let's just not attack them directly. Well, we're going to attack them directly, but just their nukes, not regime change. The entire thing, it's a rollout, like for a CD, like for an album, like for a movie. It is calculated every step of the way to make sure you do not protest. You do not go in the streets and say no war with Iran. You don't raise your voice on social media and say no war with Iran. And once again, remember who is responsible for it all: the Jews. They are responsible for every war in the world. It's not even debatable at this point. This has nothing to do with oil. This has nothing to do with democracy. This has nothing to do with liberal internationalism. We are at war with Iran because they pose a threat to Israel's hegemony. That's why we're bombing their nukes, to pave the way for regime change so Israel can dominate the region, because that makes them the most powerful they can be. They used their allies in the United States that aren't even Israeli. The Israeli state used American Jews. Think of this: American-born American Jews that have never known a country other than America. They were born here. They were raised here. They made their fortune here. Many of them are liberal. Many of them are Democrats. They're not even right-wing. They weren't even supporters of Netanyahu. But because they are Jewish, they can be counted on and relied upon to lobby the government to bomb Iran on Israel's behalf. So don't tell me it's about oil. Don't tell me it's about democracy. Don't tell me it's nation building or neocons. And don't even tell me it's Zionists or like Kudniks. Don't tell me it's revisionist Zionists. It is Jews that did this. It is the Jews in Israel. It is the Jews in the diaspora. It is right-wing Jews. It is left-wing Jews. It is Jews in the Likud party. It is Jews outside the Likud party. It is Jews on the Republican side, Jews on the Democratic side. They have counted upon, across the board, Jews on the basis of their loyalty to the Jewish nation worldwide to lobby the government for this ultimate strike. That's why all of this is happening. And you know what's going to happen? It's very obvious. Either the United States will get involved now and we bomb Iran. If we don't, Israel will launch a false flag against the United States to force us. They'll blow up a U.S. base, a U.S. ship, a terror attack on American soil. One way or another, we're getting involved. And when we bomb Iran's nuclear sites, you know what happens the next day? Iran is going to drop missiles on American bases, and American soldiers are going to die. And what do you think happens then? We say, well, you know, they were right to respond. We did our nuclear strike. Now we're done. No. No. Americans are going to die. They're going to die some more. And then we're going to fight for regime change, and more Americans are going to die. And on the end of it, Iran is going to have regime change. A government will be installed that is loyal to Israel and Washington. And a lot of Americans will be dead. A lot of money will have been spent. America will have been spread thin for Israel. Americans that are alive today will be dead next week because of Israel, because Israel wanted them to. Israel sees their death as a victory because it makes us fight for them, for their wars, because they fucking hate us. You want to talk about religious nut jobs in the desert. You want to talk about religious fanatics that hate Christians, that hate Europeans? You want to talk about religious fanatics that can't be trusted with a nuclear bomb? Psychopaths in the desert that are willing to kill Americans and children? The answer's right in front of you. It's not Iran, it's Israel. And if you don't believe me, then explain why they're always at the Arch of Titus giving it the middle finger. Explain that one to me. Explain why Gad Saad, the Jew in Canada, said he's going to leave the West because we don't support Israel. Explain why Ben Shapiro said the only reason he loves America is because we give money to Israel. I have a news flash for you. This is a little thought experiment. It's a news flash and a thought experiment. It's a two-in-one gift. I'm going to give it to you right now. Here's a little piece of advice. Here's a little thought experiment. Do you think for even one second that if the United States stopped supporting Israel such that it imperiled Israel's survival and existence, do you think the Jews in America would hesitate to treat the United States government like the government of Nazi Germany? All of the hatred, all of the seething, obsessive, histrionic, paranoid hatred that the Jews have for the Nazis, for Nazi Germany, for even for that matter, Iran and the Palestinians. Do you think for one second they would be incapable of harboring that against Americans if Americans did not protect Israel? If Americans were skeptical of Israel, distrusting of Jews, if America endeavored to disempower Jews so they couldn't force us to fight their wars? What do you think would happen if the U.S. government said Jewish billionaires can't put money in politics to make us fight wars for Israel? Mark my words, they would have the same hatred of America like they do for Nazi Germany. What does that tell you? It means they already hate us. They already hate us. They've hated us from the beginning. They hate us because we are the new Rome. They hate us because we descend from the old Rome. They hate us because we are Christians. They hate us because we are not Jews. They hate us because we are not of their tribe. They don't believe we have souls. They believe they were created in the image of God. They have a cosmic importance in this world. They have a cosmic duty to repair the universe. And they think that we are animals that are here to help them. They think that we are a lower form of life. We are beasts that are here to help them do it. Goyim, the nations, they call us. The nations. They also use it as a pejorative to mean a beast. A beast that looks like a man, but is still a beast. And if you think that they reserve that hatred for the Palestinians, but not us, that they're capable of harboring a hatred where they can have this collective guilt against the Palestinians, but not us. That they could hate the Iranians or the Nazis or the Russians for that matter, the Russian Tsar and his family at the Winter Palace, but not Americans. You're mistaken. They do, and they're not your friend. They can never be our friends as long as they adhere to Jewish supremacy, as long as they adhere to that religion. And what has become a form of a secular religion, an ethno-religion. Many of them, they don't even believe in the Old Testament, like Strauss, like others, but they still believe in their story, their nationhood, their victimization, their struggle. That's the red pill at the center of it all. That's why we're here. So anyway, so that's that. And pay attention to who's not telling you the whole story. The one other last thing before we get into the news, and this is another subtle thing. It's a bit more subtle than the Charlie Kirks and the Michael Knowles and all these other idiots. Something that Tucker Carlson and others are saying. They're talking about Iran and the regime change war that's about to unfold as though this is the plan of neocon planners in the deep state in the government. You're hearing this a lot. It's nation building. It's neocons. It's regime change. Let's be very clear. There's sort of two ideas here. Let's talk about the war in Iraq. In Iraq, what we were told is that Iraq was connected to Al-Qaeda and therefore responsible for 9/11. They were behind an anthrax plot. We were told they were building weapons of mass destruction. We were also told that overthrowing Saddam Hussein had this big strategic significance, because if we could create a democracy in Iraq, democracy might take root and spread to other countries. And why is that beneficial? Because of liberal internationalism. Liberal internationalism is a school of thought in international relations, and it rests on a number of assumptions. One of those core tenets is democratic peace theory. It says that democracies don't declare war on each other. So if we turned Iraq into a democracy, and this was also, by the way, the thinking behind the Arab Spring in 2011, they said if Iraq became a democracy and we invested in it, it became part of complex interdependence, became part of the international trade system, joined the UN and the rest of it, they said other countries would emulate that model. And the Middle East would suddenly be friendly to Israel and Washington, and it would be rich and prosperous and peaceful and stable and all the rest. And so that was the idea, was not only to overthrow Saddam Hussein and denuclearize Iraq, but also to nation build. That's where you hear that term, nation building. We weren't just there to overthrow Saddam and take away the nukes. We were there to build a new democratic country. And of course, what happened? Well, some say hubris. You can't plant the seeds of democracy in a country that never had it. You can't go to a culture that is incompatible with the West, that has no history of liberalism, and you can't export our model to them. We learned that the hard way. So they say it was hubris. It was this utopian vision motivated by maybe good intentions to export a model that would never work idealistically. And it failed. And we learned that lesson. And now we have a different tack in the Middle East. Now we overthrow Gaddafi and we don't even bother. We don't even bother trying to create a democracy. We overthrow Assad and we just let ISIS take the wheel. Let's be very clear, though. Everything that I just said is a lie. That's all tenuous. No, wrong. The reason we went to war in Iraq is because Israel wanted us to go to war in Iraq. Don't believe me? Read Oded Yanan's plan for the 1980s. Better yet, Israel Shayhock wrote a book about it. It's 32 pages. It's on Internet Archive. Look it up. You want a book recommendation? There you go. Oded Yanan, who was an advisor to a future Israeli prime minister, wrote this in the late 70s, early 80s. He said, we have to destroy Iraq. We have to rip it apart into a bunch of different pieces. In 1996, many of the apparatchiks that went to work under George W. Bush in the State Department and the DOD and the Pentagon, they drafted a report for Benjamin Netanyahu's government. And it said, in order to secure Israel's northern border and the realm, we need to overthrow Saddam. We need to roll back and destabilize Syria and then eventually go for Iran. It's literally their playbook. In PNAC's memo, few years later, Project for a New American Century, they released a similar report. They said we have to overthrow Saddam. In order to do that, we need a new Pearl Harbor, 9/11. Saddam was Israel's number one enemy. Israel almost killed George Bush in 1990 because he wouldn't overthrow Saddam. Israel was threatened by Iraq. Israel was threatened by Syria and Iran. And that is why we have visited all those different countries. That's why we visited Libya, Sudan, Somalia, Lebanon, all of it. Now, those that say this is a completely contrary explanation. When people say, no, we got into Iraq because of the folly of liberal internationalism or neoconservatism or democratic realism as promulgated by Charles Krauthammer. People that say, and there's something similar there to you as a Jew. But when they say that the U.S. went to war in Iraq because of hubris and folly. We wanted to build a democracy, but it didn't work. We tried to export liberalism, but it never took root. We learned our lesson the hard way. No, that is a cover story. That's a cover story that maybe George W. Bush believed, and maybe Dick Cheney believed that, and maybe some people believe that. But they were pushed. They were pushed on that lie by Jewish neocons at the Weekly Standard and National Review, in like 15 or 20 publications, by think tanks, by lobbyists who were all Jewish and aligned with Israel, and aligned with Israel's strategic agenda, which was to overthrow Iraq to secure Israel's borders. It had nothing to do with democracy. It had nothing to do with nation building or any of that. That's how they sold it. And now 20 years later, we're getting this again. Tucker Carlson called out Mark Levin last week, 2 weeks ago. Before Israel bombed Iran, Mark Levin and Ike Perlmutter, a Jewish donor, had lunch with Trump at the White House, and they pressed Trump to go to war in Iran. Tucker Carlson wrote a long post criticizing Mark Levin and his efforts to pressure Trump to go to war in Iran. Throughout the entire post, Tucker did not once mention that Mark Levin is Jewish and is pushing Trump because of his loyalty to Israel. He said it's about neocons, it's about regime change, it's about nation building. When, as a matter of fact, we all know it has nothing to do with any of those things. Nobody's pushing to go to war in Iran to nation build or because we think Iran will be a democracy. On the contrary, people are saying we should overthrow the Iranian government and install a monarchy. This is not nation building. This is not neocon. This is not liberal internationalism. This is, as explicitly as it gets, just Israel's foreign policy. We're going to war in Iran because it is Israel's foreign policy. Our foreign policy is dictated by Israel. It's good for them. We're doing it. And why is that not being spotlighted? Why is no one drawing attention to this? Everyone's talking about everything else. People are talking about the folly of regime change, the folly of nation building, whether democracy is exportable. It has nothing to do with any of that. Israel fired the first shot because they've been deliberately sabotaging diplomacy, because they want us to fight Iran on their behalf, because Iran is their enemy. And that's all there is to it. Americans will die because it's good for Israel. Period. End of story. Now, what conclusions can you draw from that? Israel's not our ally. Probably they're more like an enemy. Because if we decided to isolate them, if we decided to cut them off, they would hurt our country and we wouldn't be able to stop them because we are so infiltrated. Don't you understand that? Not only are they not our ally, if the second that we tried to cut ties or roll back their influence, they would hurt us. They would kill our president. They would hurt Americans. They wouldn't hesitate. And ultimately, they would be willing to drop a nuclear bomb on us. It's called the Samson option. They are not our friends. And they should not have influence in our country. And Jewish people, they just cannot be trusted in the highest echelons of power, insofar as they are loyal to another regime like this, whether it's Israel or it's world Jewry as a whole. But nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to take it there. People want to talk about neocons and the deep state and the CIA and NGOs and the State Department and USAID and the Catholic Church and Gladio and all this nonsense, all to avoid what is right in your face, the obvious. This is Israel's foreign policy. Americans are going to die for Israel. And that's because Jews have so much power over America. We are a vassal state. We have no sovereignty. We have no independence. America First is not about foreign policy on some level. It's not about immigration. America First is about sovereignty. Do we have sovereignty? Do Americans run America? Are Americans in charge of America? Can the American president overrule Israel, overrule Jewish billionaires, overrule Wall Street and the media and the rest of it? Because if the answer is no, then we have no sovereignty. We have no republic. If our president, which is a real office created by the Constitution, empowered by the Electoral College, and now through the voters, if he has no power, then we have no power. And if we have no power, then who does? This tiny minority that hates us? That's the issue at hand here. And I'm not willing to be put on a reservation by Stephen Miller. We're going to applaud the good dark elves, the good Jews. They're going to kick out the immigrants while still running our country. so we could have a better quality of life. I don't want a better quality of life. I want freedom. I want sovereignty. I want independence. I'm a fucking American. I'm a Christian. We're in this apocalyptic crisis. It is suicidal for America. Everyone recognizes that. Everyone recognizes this is a catastrophic mistake for the United States. And it is an unforced error. It's a repeated mistake. How many times have we done this? Afghanistan, guess who's in charge of Afghanistan? The Taliban. Iraq, guess who's in charge of Iraq? Hezbollah. Okay? Hezbollah is part of their security apparatus. In Syria, guess who's in charge of Syria? Al-Qaeda, okay? Al-Julani, who they're now calling Ahmed al-Shara, he comes from Al-Qaeda. Who's in charge of Libya? Terrorists. Over and over and over again. And we're about to make another mistake. It's going to cost more money, kill more Americans. We're already spread thin between Ukraine and Taiwan and the rest of it. And the dimension that nobody wants to talk about is who has been responsible for all these events, going back to 63, 2001, and now this. It's just downright un-American to not have the courage to call that out. And people can, you know, people can say whatever they want about it. People say, oh, well, you know, you need to be more strategic. I don't know. What was it, strategic when we declared independence against the British Empire? Was that strategic? I think they were kind of picking a fight that they were unlikely to win in 1776 too, actually. Is it American to try and cozy up to our Jewish masters, and if we kiss their ass enough, maybe they'll let us stop importing immigrants? Stephen Miller's the Hebrew Hammer. He's awesome. He's making me like them, actually. I think we should have Stephen. I'm okay with the Jewish president if it's Stephen Miller. Why? Because he's going to give us reprieve from the endless onslaught of mass migration. Give me a break. Fuck you. You are not American. So, you know, and they say, well, you know, I'm founding stock. Your ancestors would piss on you. They would piss on you. They say, I'm founding stock. I'm a founding stock Protestant. And you kiss the ass of your Jewish masters. Founding stock would piss on you. They'd be rolling over in their graves. They would hate you. They would want you to kill yourself immediately. You know, I see all these dissidents on Twitter. Dissidents, they got their flags in the bio. A founding stock, Mayflower stock. Your ancestors put their lives and their honor and their sacred fortune on the line for their sovereignty against the British Empire. You kiss the ass of Israel. You kiss the ass of Jews who hate you. Yoram Hazony banned Peter Brimelow from his conference, and you kiss their ass. They would hate you. The founders and the revolutionaries would hate you. You're not a real American. You're not a real Roman. You're not a real Christian. This is the struggle of our times. What's the struggle of our times? Against the left? The Democrats? Harry Sisson? People got a lot more to say about Harry Sisson than they have to say about Netanyahu. And that tells you something. They got a lot more to say about the people criticizing Netanyahu than they do about Netanyahu. If someone is spending all their time on Twitter carefully critiquing and managing how you critique Trump or how you critique Israel, rather than critiquing Trump and Israel, that should tell you something, shouldn't it?